Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. I'm John Norman and today bringing you another exclusive interview, this time between one fast bowler and another.
Mark Wood in for the fifth ball of the over.
It's full straight off the bat of the ground.
Steve Harmison sitting down with a man who has 50 test wickets, a man who can easily bowl over 90 miles an hour and a man lucky enough to win the Cricket World Cup.
Here is Wood.
Look at him!
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 and an exclusive interview with the England fast bowler, Mark Wood.
First of all, Mark, a month on from what has been, I think, obviously a crazy summer, but a great summer for English cricket and English sport for lockdown and COVID. But to see that on TV, there was some, you know, there was some high-level cricket played.
Hi, Harmy. Thanks for having us. It's been, a crazy summer. The fact that we just got some cricket in is a major bonus. It was looking at one point, especially early on the summer, that we weren't going to get anything. Bowling tennis balls in the back garden, going for runs, out by yourself on the street, people looking at you a little bit funny in the lane. But look, it had to be done, and I'm just glad that we got some cricket in the end. And we've got to give massive credit to the West Indies, Pakistan and Australia for coming over. And the staff at both Southampton and Manchester were fantastic with the team. I can't praise them enough. So something that was a little bit different and a little bit strange was made a lot easier by those people.
How was life in that bubble? If you praised, and rightly so, Aegeus Bowl and Emirates Old Trafford for the way they've looked after you. But it must have been dark times because I just kept reminding people, you switch on 5 minutes before the toss starts. 5 minutes before the toss and the game starts and you're making your tea or supper in your house by the time, I don't know, the lads have come off the field when they're finishing the game. So they don't see before, they don't see end, they don't see warm-up days and they don't see the after or in-between times. They're tough times, especially when you're in a bubble like that.
Yeah, I thought it was actually hard not playing as well because I didn't play many games. And I found it difficult to almost get up for the next day because it was at like Groundhog Day times. Yeah. You'd get up and late on at night where usually you could get out, you could sample, you know, the culture of a place, or you get some people, or you go to a nice restaurant if you're on tour. Even if you're in England, you can go to some places that you've maybe not been before, you can socialise with the lads. Whereas this time, you finish eating your what felt like a school dinner in a dinner hall, a table to yourself. I nearly wrote Woody was here a couple of times, but decided not. And then you sort of go back to your room at 7 o'clock, and it's like, well, what do I do now? And people might think, oh, well, you'll get to bed at 9 o'clock. But I was actually going the other way and getting to bed at 1, 2 in the morning because you can't, it's just like a lull of nothingness. And then the next day, right, it starts again. And the cricket wasn't so bad when it was on because you were busy. But if you had off days, I found them the hardest because I counted Beefy's picture on the wall a few times in Beefy's restaurant. It was 27 or 26 pictures of Beefy in his restaurant. That's how bored I got.
I'm sure Serene would have loved them pictures, every single one, wouldn't he? He'd know everything about them. But yeah, and it is. And I can sympathise with that. And there'll be people listening at home who, let's be fair, we talk about professional sportsmen. And yes, we've got things. We had the, I'm saying that we've got things. I had things. I was very privileged and very proud that the life I had. And, you know, we're from a working class coal mining background. But it is tough when you are, from a psychological point of view, to get yourself, you know, motivated for the next year and also try and do your job properly.
No, yeah, exactly right. And look, don't get us wrong. I appreciate everything. Like, you looked after brilliant with England. Mm. You paid well, everything. So let's not get away from the fact that you looked after very, very well. But from a mental health point of view, so the bubble was hard because it wasn't just, you know, a week and then you get a break or something. It was like time after time after time. The only break you got was when you went the next ground and then you'd settle into the new hotel for a couple of days and then you'd be back to the exact same
ground
thing again.
Groundhog Day again.
So, yeah, so I just feel like, you know, from a mental health point of view, we have guys in there. We had a psychologist who would pop in and out. We have a guy called Mark Saxby, who's actually a masseur, but
brilliant guy.
The heartbeat of the team. Like, literally, he will take everyone's problems on his shoulders, and he seems to make it better.
He doesn't get paid enough.
Yeah, he's a top, top man. And he sort of would check in on people and make sure people are all right. So we did have people who would sort of look after you, but it was down to you, really, to how much that you could give back. And it was very weird, actually, the atmosphere of having no fans in. I actually, in a way, it was like a positive and a negative. The positive was that you felt a little bit more relaxed. It felt a bit more like a genuine club game. Mm-hmm. I was rocking up for Asherton and, you know, you were going to have fun. But then it also had that seriousness about it then when you got into the games, that when you needed that extra edge or that bit to get you up, or you need a wicket, or the Aussies are on top, mm-hmm. right, the crowd will give you a bit back. We needed that at times and it wasn't there. So we did miss the fans, the Barmy Army and things like that. So it was a bit strange, but over the summer of what they outlined at the start, I think the ECB will be pretty happy that at least we've getting some cricket in and that we've been able to contribute to grassroots level and things like that.
In this innings, Mark Wood has become the fastest bowler in England history when you look at average speeds. He went past some other bloke from Ashington.
You mentioned Ashton. Talk back to then, fast bowler, 90-odd mile an hour. I can say, where did it come from? Because Dad was a batsman. Uncle Neil, batsman. But you went down a fast bowling route. How are you getting that? Because not exactly 6 foot five. And, you know, Neil's not a tall guy.
Yeah.
Mum and Dad, not tall.
No idea. It must be something in the water up here. Me and you, I've got no idea. But I was started off as a batter as well, little swing bowler. I actually remember a coach we had, or a senior player called Michael Thewlis.
Yeah, another one who is probably one of the best amateur cricketers I've ever played with.
He pulled me aside one day and said, you're trying to bowl too fast, what are you doing? So that bit of advice worked well, didn't it, Michael?
It did very well.
But I think, look, I've got no idea. I think I had believe it or not, a growth spurt at one point, which took me from 4 foot 11 to 5 foot five. And out of nowhere, I think I got a yard of pace. The timing of my action probably helped, that sort of whippy athletic sort of nature that I've got. And in a way, it helped me being a bit lighter, and the fact that I know I've had injuries, but when I was young, being lighter actually helped me develop that pace. And then when I got to a certain level, I remember actually you were one of the people I spoke to about getting strong in the right areas, so not going to the gym and being a bench press master.
I was never one of them. Not a bench press master, I just never went to the gym.
But it was about getting strong in the right areas, and I think once my body developed a little bit more, I was able to consistently hold that pace more and more. And since I've changed my run-up, that's helped even more.
Yeah, there's been a marked difference since you've changed your run-up. But is that something that's always driven you from an early age, just bowling fast?
Not really. And I had sat here, but I was probably watching you on the TV, if I'm honest.
Oh, it's in the air.
We crammed into the local cricket club lounge, as it's called. There was a TV. You're bowling in the 2005 Ashes. You get that last wicket, Kasper. The whole lounge erupts. Everyone's up in arms and we're jumping around. And I'll never forget then, you know, 2 days or 3 days later, you're back at the club with seeing everybody up there. And it was just that feeling of, you know, I want to be like that. I want to achieve that. I'd love to be that go-to guy like you were. And that was someone, you know, you were someone that I looked up to.
The cricket club had that, though. And what I mean by
it breeds, it's a good breeding ground in terms of, you know, people are down to earth. If you get too big for your boots, they'll bring you down pretty quickly. We are working class people, and I think the values in the Northeast, and especially where we're from, I think they ring true and are sort of hard work. Yeah, you know, you don't just get given it, and that, you know, if you have a sort of humble nature about you and you try your best, but yeah, kind along the way. I think it goes a long way.
But I think what I mean by we had that, cricket clubs around the country, if you've got somebody that you've produced that have gone on to, you know, play first-class cricket or play national cricket, you see them on the telly, you know, it produces good young players and interest that people comes with it. And we had that at the cricket club, and we've got that now. I think when you see, you know, you're walking around the boundary, you see kids now wanting to be you, Mark Wood. How does that make you feel when you, like you said before, you were walking around as a 12-year-old?
I don't know. It feels kind of weird, actually. I think, you know, I just feel the same normal lad that lived down the road. Used to walk up the cricket club with my bag, hop the fence, play chucksies, or skimsies, or whatever you call it at home, where you would get a wind ball and you'd skim it off a ridge. And
which you still do now, isn't it?
Exactly.
With the kids at the cricket club.
Exactly. One hand, one bounce, all that kind of stuff. I think I'm a normal lad from a normal background, a working class background, who's been lucky enough to play for England. Mm. And, you know, you had a talent that people looked up to, and it's great that, you know, hopefully I can inspire some other young kids there.
Couple of quick fire questions, just to sort of change tact a little bit. Favourite wicket?
Hetmyer, St Lucia.
Wood, five slips in place and a short leg. He bowls to Hetmyer. No, he's nicked it! And Joe Root has caught it!
Favourite innings?
Well, I remember texting you when I got my 50, so I'm going to have to say 50.
50.
Yeah.
Right, I'll leave it at that one. Toughest opponent to bowl to?
Kane Williamson. It's like bowling a barn door. I'm sure his bat's wider than everyone else's.
And this is a hard one for you, I think. The most challenging moment in your career?
I've had a few. I reckon third operation. Just came back from my second ankle operation. Things weren't right, knew they weren't right. Had to go for a third ankle operation. Ended up having some pretty bad mental health stuff with anxiety. Had a panic attack on a flight. So around that sort of time, I would say that was the hardest, because I didn't know if I wanted to do it anymore. I was sick of the rehab. I thought I would never reach the potential that I could, or thought I had. And I was just generally sick of not being the player I wanted to be. So I did contemplate thinking, look, I've had enough of this. Should I do something else? But I'm glad I stuck with it.
It's interesting that, because if we talk about professional sportsmen, and everybody sees the glitz, they don't see the downsides, like we talked about earlier in the show. How close were you? Because you've had some, you know, not so much as well as challenging times, but you've had some times where you've come back and broke down straight away again. How close have you been of thinking, you know what, I could easily just play for Durham, not push myself as much, try and bowl 85 mile an hour? And was that, one, a thought? Two, a consideration? Or was always, I've got to play at the highest level and be the best and fastest bowlers I possibly can?
I think I wouldn't say I contemplated bowling slower and just, you know, settling in, trying to have a good little county career at Durham and maybe playing a few games for Asherton. I always wanted to, as soon as I had a taste for international cricket, that's what I wanted. As a lad that grew up from my mum and dad, or, you know, the working class people that didn't have much when I was growing up. So to feel so lucky and proud that I managed to play for England, I wanted to try and keep that going and push myself as hard as I could. I was actually close a couple of times to saying, look, I've had enough, just because I didn't think I could cope with it with my body. Kevin Shine was a guy who always stuck by me. The England fast bowling coach, Otis Gibson, at the time stuck by me. The physios endlessly worked at me. And like I said, probably my run-up was my biggest change to long-term change of longevity, being able to bowl longer spells, stick it out, and get bigger and stronger that way. But initially with the short run-up, I was sort of in, out, injured, back. And it's not so much the when you get back, because that's actually the good bit when you're back. It's the bit where you think, right, I've got to get back in the gym. And it's not just in the gym, I've got to lift weights. It's little exercises. It's running on the streets when it's dark.
And it's lonely.
Yeah, it's right, I've got to go for another injection. And they're little things that, you know, people might think that they're nothing, but after four, five, six, seven times of doing it, you're like, I've had enough of this.
Yeah. And is it something that you ever contemplated saying, time to move on and do something else?
Yeah, I did. But I would say, at one point, I definitely contemplated, right, should I just go down the white ball route? It's less stress on my body, 10 overs or 4 overs. I could still make good money for my family. And, you know, that could be a possibility that even in the future I might have to go down. I don't know. but more the fact that there was probably one time, I'd say, around that third operation where I was definitely like, look, I'm not sure that I can keep doing it.
Oh, it's in the air. Marinelli's there. Has he taken it? Yes, he has. Brilliant catch. Absolutely outstanding. Alistair Cook set the trap. And Trent Bolt has fallen straight into it. Brilliant England. An outstanding test victory.
What was it like making your test debut?
Scary, proud, exciting, a lot to take in. I would say I took too much in, especially that first day. I texted you actually on the night time.
Do you remember everything about that first initial phone call to letting go of that first ball?
Yes, I remember everything about it. I remember feeling like I couldn't breathe. I remember feeling like the ball wasn't going to literally come out of my hand. But luckily, I bowled it to Tom Latham, who I'd played with at Durham at the time. Yeah. And he was kind enough to pat along. Long hop back to me. And then after that, I was fine. After he got the first ball out of the way, I was okay. But I took the cameras in, I took the crowd in. Bearing in mind, probably my biggest game was in front of a couple of thousand at Durham, maybe a 2020. I'd never been in a full house at Lords. I'd never even played at Lords. Mm. Every time I'd gone to Lords at Durham, I was 12th man. I'd never played. So my first game at Lords was for England, making my debut. And it was just, I just took too much in, as you probably can imagine that you might do. Now, if I had advice to a younger player, I'd say, you know, do take it in, but remember when you're on, someone said to me, the stumps don't move.
They do, and I remember that. I remember when I said that to you. But Ashes cricket soon came around. You know, I played against New Zealand, Lords, everything come, but nothing is like playing in the Ashes. And to bowl the ball that wins the Ashes is something special as well.
Bowled in, dragged on. Wood the man with the final wicket, 599 days after handing the urn over to Australia, Cook has his redemption.
I think, you know, I've had a lot of people that say that to me. I don't think it meant as much to me as what it has to other people. I know that might sound a bit strange, but actually winning the Ashes actually felt like a bigger achievement than just the guy that bowled the winning ball. Because I think, you know, he dragged on a wide ball that wasn't really that good, but it's still a wicket.
It's still a wicket. Stumps don't move.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. It feels a bit strange to me that, you know, am I not making a bigger deal of it than it should be? It's obviously a proud moment. Any wicket is against Australia, but it was great. But I was more pleased at the fact that we got over the line that game, and it was a bit of relief.
And the Ashes coming round the corner in best part of nearly a year's time. And you don't want to fast forward too much and look at, you know, the big picture, because you've got a huge series against India, home and away. But what would it mean to Mark Wood to walk out at Brisbane first test match? Well, I've got great memories of that place. And hopefully still be in a position in Sydney in the last test match to potentially win the Ashes away from home. Something that England have only done once in donkey's years.
I think it would mean a lot, obviously, with Chris Silverwood being head coach, an ex-bowler who's been there, who knows the hardships of Australia. He set out a plan of long-term of what we're after, him and Ashley Giles. I know from discussions, we're going to look to try and take myself, Jofra, Ollie Stone, other quick bowlers around that time, and rotate in and out and try and keep the heat on Australia like they have done on us over the years, especially on those wickets. We've got a great chance to go out there, and we're building something in test match cricket with the bat, and I think we've got fantastic ball and depth to be able to cause a real upset there.
Here comes Anderson in again and bowls, so this delivery is edging and he's out quite at first slip. That happened so easily. That was the right length, that was the right line.
Say bowling rotation, but you played the first test match of the summer with Stuart, with Jofra Archer, and then Stuart Broad, rightly or wrongly, you know, test these, and I would have done the same as an experienced player, tested the, you know, the selectors and see if they wanted to get into a battle, into a fight. Then he didn't play again. How difficult do you think it's going to be to rotate, especially with Broad and Anderson? And Broad and Anderson have still, for me, have still got life left in them. But how difficult do you think it would be for the selectors to rotate with them two guys still in the mix in bowling? To be fair, they're bowling very, very well.
Well, if he bowls like he did this summer, I've got no chance.
Exactly. So, yeah, well, I wouldn't say exactly, but he'll have a choice of opinion of asking to play each time if he bowls like
exactly.
That.
Exactly. I think it was very special circumstances this summer, and the fact that every game was so close, back to back to back. I think. If we go to Australia with the schedule the way it is, I mean, hopefully COVID, there's a change in that, or, the schedule will be slightly different. It'll not be so close together and compact. So it'll give a chance for workloads to be managed a bit better. If lads are doing well and they're feeling in good rhythm, then they'll stay in the team. I think in a good way, it pushes you on. You want your friend to do well. I want England to win. I'm a big fan, obviously. But, you know, you're competing and you want to do better than the next guy. You want to push yourself. You want to better yourself. So I just want to improve myself going into Australia. And, you know, if that's not good enough, then, you know, it'd be great to support the lads on the sidelines. But I'll be doing everything I can to get on the team.
What's it like playing with these two? Because they are living legends. You know, I take the mickey out of them because they were two young bucks when I first came about. Two older, experienced players now. They've still got, you know, still got a bit of life in them. They're still fantastic bowlers. But what's it like to play with them and the skill level of Anderson and Broad?
I think to start with, the Nets is probably a massive eye-opener because the way that they sort of train, how meticulous they are, what they're thinking about, they're actually thinking in the Nets how the fields they would have, how they'll get people out, how they'll bowl at certain batsmen, so Sibley in the Nets, how they don't just see, you know, Steve Smith, they're thinking, right, how would I get Sibley? How would I adapt to this? How would I adapt to that? Right now, Steve Smith's there. How would I adapt to this? And that skill level and that, I mean, Jimmy's got a wobble in swinger and a wobble out swinger. And I haven't even got a wobble full stop, so I don't know. Well,
I tell you what, you don't want to retire too early because I've retired and 5 years later, I wobble everywhere. you must think, you know, as much as it is frustrating, you know, to be and round and learn like that. I learned off Goffey. I love Goffey and learned off Goffey. Carrick was sometimes you struggle to get anything really out of Caddy. He was a fantastic cricketer and fantastic bowler. But the enthusiasm that Goffey had for the game and, you know, and Hoggy Simon, you mentioned, it was great to be in a group of bowlers where you think, no matter how good you are as a batsman, I think we are better than you as a group of bowlers.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we haven't just got Jimmy and Brodie who are phenomenal bowlers. And I think a lot of the time, batters are a little bit beaten before they go in against them too. They're talked up so much, they've got so much wickets behind them, they've got so much skill level behind them that they know that before they even get out there, they're in for a battle. But to have 5, 6, 7 bowlers, Stokes, phenomenal bowler. I know everyone thinks about his batting, but actually his bowling skill is right up there. Reverse swing, swinging the ball. We've got Jofra's pace, Arkenball quick, Sam Curran, Chris Wokes are around the team who are fantastic bowlers who would walk in any other international team straight away. And then you've got lads that aren't even getting in this side who you'd think on other international teams they'd get in. Craig Overton's had a fantastic summer in county cricket. Saqib Mahmood's a lad that can bowl quickly. Ollie Stone's a lad that can bowl quickly. So we've got our depth is fantastic. I think, you know, if we can get it right and get the mix right, I think we could be a real handful for Australia.
Here is Wood. And looks at the ball game. Straight through the number 11. Middle stump Yorker. Mark Wood has 5.
And just to finish off on Test match cricket, St Lucia go there off the back of not a great deal of cricket, but with a new run-up. How satisfying was that to not only bowl the way you bowled, but to put some ease in your own mind that this actually has worked, and I'm sure that is the best day you've had in Test match cricket. Best feel you've had in Test match cricket.
Best I've ever felt, hands down. From a team point of view, the World Cup will trump anything. But from a personal point of view, that game was my sort of breakthrough, the best game I can imagine. I was a bit emotional in the dressing room after because of everything that had gone before, working so hard. I wasn't originally picked on that tour. Feel sorry for Ollie Stone, where I've been the other guy that's been injured and have to leave. Yeah. He got injured, had to leave, so I came in. I'd gone away with the Lions in the winter where Trevor Bayliss had said he wanted to see a bit more mongrel in me. So that meant cranking it up in the Nets, being a bit more...
Ruthless,
yeah. Which actually isn't really in my nature.
No, it's not.
So that's something that I, you know, with the new run-up I developed, I worked hard with in the winter. I wanted to prove, and this is quite selfish and a bit big-headed and not a bit like me, but I wanted to prove that I was a step ahead of the other lads that were in the Lions at the time. I wanted to prove that, you know, I was better than them and that I deserved to be the next guy that was picked. Luckily, I did all right in the UAE against Pakistan A. That then got me the call-up to go to West Indies. And St Lucia, I don't think I could ever... You'll know what it's like, but to try and describe to people at home Root could have set any field he wanted, anything. And all I could see was the bat and the stumps.
So that's it.
That was literally it.
I felt like
I could run in all day. I felt like my legs were, you know, I felt like I was absolutely flying in, and that my head, my body, everything was going towards the target. And that it was literally like the ball off my fingers felt so at ease.
I know how you feel. Jamaica in 2004, 7 for 12. Yeah! That'll do it. Triscothic takes the catch. Harmison becomes the most successful bowler ever at Sabina Park. Sitting here now, the only three people that were in the game was me, Chris Reid and Marcus Triscothic. I was bowling, you know, in good lines, good length. I felt as though the ball was coming out so well that I was going to get a wicket with every ball. If he nicked it, it would have went to first slip or it would have went to the wicketkeeper. And when Vaughan sent that field of about 8 slips. To be fair, Vaughan stood behind Simon Jones and Matthew Hoggard because he didn't want to catch
it.
He had the worst pair of hands in the world. That's why he was a great captain, because he stood at mid-off talking to his bowlers. But I just felt it doesn't matter where the other 8 fielders feel. As long as them three are in position, 2 are in position, I'll get wickets. And sitting right behind in the commentary box, it looked exactly like that. It looked as though you were feeling $1 million.
I couldn't actually see. So I would walk back my mark and turn and go. And I remember every time I got a wicket, I'd just see this massive thumbs up from the window.
Yeah, I was on commentary most time.
Yeah.
And it was great to see, because I'd been with the dark time of Mark Wood probably 6 weeks earlier, when you didn't get picked and you had to go through all this and you had a renewed run-up, but you didn't know whether it was going to be the right thing. So to feel the way you felt must have been unbelievable.
It was easily the best feeling, I think, personally, because I actually felt then like I belonged in the England team. I was always on the fringe. I never really lived up the potential that people saw, or inwardly or deep down I really believed that I was, but I'd never shown that. So that was a bit of a relief, a lot of emotion. And that was the first game I felt like an England player.
Still to come on the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2, Mark Wood discussing what it was like to win the Cricket World Cup and explaining why he hated playing in the final at Lord's.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Gattel's going to push for Tony. They've got to go. It's got to throw. It's got to go to the keeper's end. He's got it. England have won the World Cup. Of margins, by the barest of all margins, absolute ecstasy for England, agony for New Zealand.
So to the World Cup, it looked as though, and I'm going back off experience, in 2005 there was a group of fast bowlers ready and primed waiting for Australia, and I think it took 18 months to get them in a position to go. Now, looking at England in the World Cup 2019, it wasn't so much the fast bowlers, it was a team. Owen Morgan, Sir Andrew Strauss, Ashley Giles, Trevor Bayliss, everybody had got this white ball unit over the course of 2 or 3 years ready for what was going to happen in England. Did it feel that way inside the 15-man squad?
Definitely. Definitely. Without a doubt. It was like we developed a little white ball family that had started. I mean, I'm going to be cringe as anything here, but it was like we'd started this journey. I'm going to throw cliches at you here. This journey.
Yeah.
4 years ago, we were down in the dumps in Australia, and then we came through the light, the Phoenix rose.
Yeah.
But look, it was a bit like that. When we got the World Cup, everybody knew each other inside out. Mm. Everybody knew each other's game. We knew our roles in the team. It had changed slightly with Jofra coming in because he was obviously new to the group. But everything else was everybody knew what they were doing, knew their roles, knew how we were playing. Morgie had us well drilled. He had the values set into that team. Be positive, enjoy each other's success, courage, always be brave with your options. And he led that way. He's very level on the field. He doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. But he will take them on the cricket field. I remember one of the first games against New Zealand under Morgie's captaincy in 2015. We just lost a wicket, and then Morgie, first ball, got caught slog sweeping on the line. Everyone was like, what's he doing? Yeah. Just rebuild? And he was like, nah, this is the way we play. We take them on. If we could take them down, take them down. And we were all out for like 360 or something in like 40-odd overs. And it was like, this is mental. Like, what are we doing? Like, just play smart cricket or knock a one. All the English crowd.
English well old played. Gentleman cricket.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. But no, that wasn't the way we were going to play. And when we led into the World Cup, it was just a case of, I can honestly say this, you might think it was different because we lost a few games, but I didn't feel like we could get beat.
Yeah.
We'd beat every team out there.
Do you think that helped? Do you think them situations helped you because of such a tight unit in difficult times?
I do. I think, you know, the media kept banging on about, you know, your favourites, is the expectations on your shoulders? Do you feel the pressure? I didn't feel any different. I felt like this was the same team, and that, you know, when you're in the trenches, when there is hard times, I'm going to look me right, Stokesy's there. I'm going to look me left, Joss Butler's there. We've got match winners all the way through the team, and when we need it, someone doesn't leave it the next guy. Someone puts their hand up and we'll win the game.
And I thought Owen Morgan did an interview about that was absolutely brilliant. For me, that was the catalyst of moving forward if I was in that team. When I think it was Nick Knight asked him, your favourites, is that pressure? And he just turned around and, no, we're going to enjoy being favourites. He was basically saying, yeah, we're favourites. We know we're going to win it. And, you know, we're gonna show everybody we're going to do it. And that seemed to get you through some, you know, some difficult times. Take us back to the morning of the final. And what was the atmosphere like going out when, you know, the toss was and you're ready to go?
I'll tell you the night before. Night before, I was strangely relaxed. Hmm. Very strangely relaxed.
Which is a surprise for you.
Yeah, I was absolutely fine. I couldn't believe it. I was thinking, like, it just hadn't really hit me.
Yeah.
It was like, I remember being at training and the day before we'd played a lot of cricket. Morgie said, get what you need done. I thought, I don't even need to bowl here. Yeah. I don't need to. I'll bowl the morning of the game, check which end I fancy of the morning of the game. I'm absolutely fine. And it wasn't until my best mate came for food with me on the night time with me and my wife, and he said, I can't believe we're going to play in the World Cup final tomorrow. We used to play World Cups at the local cricket club.
Yeah.
And then I was like,
that's really what you want to hear.
And that was probably the first time it hit me. And then the next morning, I remember seeing the banner plastered on Lords, ICC World Cup final.
Yeah.
And when the banner was up around the stands, I was like, this is it. Mm. Jason Roy had the most energy, double the energy I had. So that tells you how much energy he had on the morning of the game. He just couldn't stop shouting. Yeah, I'm going to flick him off my legs for six. You know what I mean? I'm going to hit him straight. You know what I mean? I'll probably get a double 100. You know what I mean? I was like, Jace, will you cut? Even for me, yeah. I'm like, you need to calm down, mate.
Just take the Red Bull off him.
And then I remember we go out for the warm-ups and stuff. I've bowled both ends. And then the toss is delayed because of weather.
Yeah.
So I'm like, right, what should I do? Should I bowl again? No, I'll have bowled me 10 over straight through. Yeah, I need to try and relax. I'll have a few high catches. Oh, we're coming off a rain. Oh, I'll just five more catches. And then we toss. I'm thinking, right, what do I want to do? Me and Rash always want to bowl first. Get what bowling done, and then we can watch the lads
Lords,
whack it
off. You've got to have a big lunch.
Yeah, yeah. Watch them whack it off, as we always do. But that morning, I don't know what it was. I was just, it was a bit grey, a bit overcast. I was a bit worried that if we did bat, you know, because we're used to playing on belters where we whack it. Yeah. I was thinking, oh, what if it just does a little bit here and then we've got to try and bowl them out and we don't have enough runs. And
it was a poor surface as well.
I actually hated the game, Harmy. Yeah. Honestly, people keep saying, oh, the World Cup final was the best. Yeah. I hated it. Yeah. I absolutely hate it. The end bit was the best.
Yeah.
But the whole match, I hated the whole game.
Was that the atmosphere or the tension? And
the tension, without
that
a doubt,
it?
The tension.
Was it the first time throughout the seven-week tournament you really thought, we are favourites and we're supposed to win here?
Yeah, a little bit. I think it was the fact that, look, we're actually here now. Yeah. This is the bit where we're meant to win.
Yeah.
Like
the
rest
the
of it, the rest of it, like, I believe we would win. This bit, we're meant to win it. Mm. It's slightly different. I know it's weird the way I'm saying it, but it felt different. And I was actually so overcharged, overthinking it, overhyped to ball because I was first change. Mm. And I was like, right, give me the ball. Right, I'm warmed. Right, I'm going to ball as fast as I can. Wait till I get the ball in my hands. And I bowled a pile of rubbish. Mm. I've watched it back since and I am screaming at the television, just hit the top of off stump. The wicket is doing enough. What are you doing?
It's hard though because me and Andrew Flintoff used to sit first test match loads when we were a little bit more experienced. And you'd look at, it was always debutants in the squad. And you'd look and you'd think, well, he's not going to last 5 minutes. He's going to struggle. Because a lot of the time, people would come into Lords first test match to get the big bag of gear. They look at the honours board and see some great names have done against great countries. That's on a Monday. Tuesday, they're doing the same. Wednesday, they're even hyper. By the time they get to Thursday morning, they've used all their energy and they play shots that arguably they would never have played for their clubs, our county side. Mm. And they're knackered by the time the second day. They're mentally fatigued. So is that what happened to players in England and in New Zealand side? Because it wasn't a, let's be fair, it wasn't a great, great Belton pitch. Mm. But two, you know, modest totals.
I feel like, if anything, you know, Lords raises it for the opposition.
Yeah.
Because of the place it is. It's an iconic place. Everybody wants to win at Lords. Everybody wants to win their game at Lords. I think the World Cup added a little bit more pressure. But for us, it was another game to try and win the World Cup final. And I feel like the pressure, that it was just it was a tense game. They didn't really get away from us, but we didn't really bowl as well as we could. I felt I'm the only one in the whole team, and I can honestly say this, because when we came off, I asked a few of them, do you think we've let them get too many? I kept saying, do you think we've let them get too many? I thought they got 20 too many. I honestly think that, because it nipped around a little bit. And I mean, when the captain Morgy speaks, you listen, and he went, that's par. We get partnerships, we win this game easy. And I was just like, I couldn't believe how blunt it was. Like, par. It just so deadpan. I was just like, I don't know if it is. Like, and I can honestly say that. I mean, I said to Joss as well, and he was like, we should win. Yeah. And I think that's just, I don't know if that's just the confidence we had in each other, how good our batting lineup is, but it wasn't that easy.
How was Trevor Bayliss in all this? Because, first of all, what was it like to play under Trevor? He seemed to be a very sort of, very calm and level-headed character, but also somebody who would rather you work it out for yourself than try and force you with information to try and, you know, push you down a direction.
Yeah, it's up to you. It's up to you with Trevor. Don't get us wrong. He's not like, he doesn't just sit back and he will give you input. But Trevor was very much, he let the captain lead. Mm. He let the dressing room lead itself. And he let you work out your own problems. The thing that reminds me of Trevor is, I remember two things. Semi-final. This is why England don't win anything, because you're celebrating semi-finals.
Yeah.
When we beat Australia at Edgbaston, we were jumping about in the dressing room after, and he stopped us straight away and went, this is why Australians think England are losers, because he celebrates our finals. We play grand finals, la la la. Of course, he was very much right, but when you've just beat Australia in a semi-final,
he's an Australian, yeah, so exactly. Put two fingers up and say, na-na-na-na-na.
And the other thing that reminds me of Trevor is down, up, throw. I must have done 150 fielding drills with Trevor by myself at times, where he would tell me, down, up, throw. That was who he was. He was as clear cut as that. He was so simple in the fact that, get wide of the ball. It was like, this is what you teach under 11s. But he literally, that was how he was. Keep it simple. What's the best way to win? Take them on. And that was literally it.
Do you think that was going through Jason Roy's... Jason Roy's head when he picked the second one up as when he misfielded the first one.
Well, Mo and Ali's comedy genius. Honestly, Mo is one of the funniest, driest people you'll ever meet. And before the last ball, the doctor has turned the other way. He's looking at the crowd. I'm like, come on, mate, this is the last ball. And my heart's beating out my chest. And the lads are saying, what's he going to bowl? Oh, he's going to bowl a bouncer. Oh, he's going to bowl a slow ball. Oh, he's going to bowl a Yorker. And Mo went, well, as long as it doesn't go into J. Roy, we'll be all right.
Stokes in again. Small, isn't it? It's been taken. Stokes has done it again.
just when England needed a hero, they found one.
This 2019 really typifies Ben Stokes as a person, a character, and a sportsman.
Couldn't agree more. Everything you've just said, absolutely spot on. Never, ever, ever, ever give up when I think of Stokesy. Mm. He's the guy that, you know, if they need five to win and they've still got 5 wickets left, he would still believe that he's going to win that game, and he'd do everything in his power. He saw it at Henley in the Ashes, the World Cup. He was a superman.
Mm. What was he like during that World Cup final? He was involved in everything.
He said one of the best things, probably for the whole group, Stokesy. Him and Morgs are the two that I certainly remember, because I thought they were bulletproof, both of them. We got beat off Sri Lanka, then we lost against Australia. We had to win every game, essentially. Four matches to win the World Cup, we can't lose.
Which probably helped.
Yeah. And we had a meeting, a psychology meeting, the psychologist David Young, who's now at Man City. They're obviously struggling. So, yeah. David, you're not as good as you think you are. But he called a meeting, and we all had a chat about how we were going to get back on track, revisit our values, revisit what served us well, what we do. And we had a chat about how we felt. And Stokesy said, you know, I'm frightened of messing up. And I couldn't believe it. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe that he said that openly. And he never says anything like that. And I was surprised that he allowed himself to say to the group, you know, I feel exactly the same as you.
Yeah.
Because he never acts like that. And actually, that lifted a weight off my shoulders. I think, you know what, I'm on the same boat here. Mm-hmm. He's not thinking, Woody looks nervous, Woody might mess up, he could cost me. He's thinking the exact same thing as me. Morgan was exactly the same. And after we sort of cleared the air, it was like we had each other's backs again, and that was it.
In goes Archer, round the wicket, it's up, back pad, he's gone. He's got him. Archer has picked up his fourth. It's a sharp catch by Zach Crawley.
And another one, Jofra. He's somebody who I've watched closely over the course of the last few weeks because of the IPL. He seems more at home in franchise and with the IPL. But people listening at home want to know what Jofra Archer's like, because you've got this enigma of somebody who just, I can relate to it a little bit, somebody who just ambles in and all of a sudden with a quick whoosh of the shoulder comes out at 95 mile an hour. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. I've said, you know, in the pressure situation of what the English media and English sport does, possibly hampered Jofra in his international career so far, but he seems to be thriving in franchise cricket. Is it as simple that Jofra might just need a little bit more time to get used to playing international cricket and the scrutiny that comes with international cricket?
Maybe, yeah. I think, obviously, when he first gets in the team, it's a whirlwind, isn't it? I mean, he's straight into a World Cup, essentially. Yeah. I mean, he played a few games against Pakistan, but, you know, it doesn't get much bigger than straight into a home World Cup when you're the guy that the whole of the media is talking about. And he coped with that brilliantly. Ended up being the hero of the Super Over, which will be remembered forever.
Yeah.
So although you might say he's still fighting his feet, he's a young guy in international cricket, he's well into the dressing room now. Everybody gets on well with him. He's just another part of the dressing room. He's very relaxed. He could sleep on a washing line. You know, he's a guy that I feel is a little bit misunderstood by the media.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
He does actually care a hell of a lot. He tries his best all of the time. And I think sometimes he gets a hard time for, you know, this attitude where it's as if he doesn't care, but actually he really does. It's just some days it might click for him and others it doesn't. But he's very well respected and well liked in our dressing room, and nobody would say that about him.
And the two captains, you look at their different characteristics. Joe and with a red ball, Owen Morgan with the white ball. Do you think it is the right thing for English cricket? I'm probably putting you on the spot here. The right thing for English cricket from a mentality point of view for the individuals to have somebody captain the red ball team and somebody captain the white ball team, because of where you go around the world, the pressure of the cricket that's played, as well as franchise cricket in between, that it's probably a nice little distraction that Joe's not captain of the white ball team and Owen's not captain of the red ball team, and they can go with it a little bit of freshness when they first take the reins when the first week.
Yeah, and what I would say is they're very different captains, which I'm glad that Rooney is his own man. He hasn't tried to clone himself on Morgie. Obviously, he's played under Morgie for a little bit before he became captain, so I'm glad that he hasn't tried to be an Alistair Cook and Owen Morgan. He's very much his own man, and it's very different. Now, what I would say is that Rooney is now building his own team, a team that he's developing with the batting lineup, and, you know, what focus very much was on the World Cup under Trevor. I mean, we wanted to win test matches and everything, but, you know, the main focus was we were down the dumps. We had a home World Cup. We wanted to win that World Cup. I would say the test match schedule was very much different. The white ball was the main central of the summer. So Rooney is now building a team where the test match focus is now more on the test match team winning in Australia. Obviously, we've got the 2020 World Cup, which is a massive deal, and we've got another World Cup in the future. But, I mean, I've played under some great captains. Without a doubt, they're all fantastic. Joe Root, Paul Collingwood, fantastic captains, but Owen Morgan's the best.
Yeah. How important is a coach in all this?
Very important.
Making sure that he doesn't cross boundaries, making sure that that's that team and that's that team, and that's the values of each team.
I mean, you'll know at international level, a coach isn't a... Right, we need to put your arm here. We need to get your leg here. We need to do this.
And he's a psychologist.
Yes. For me, the head coach takes the pressure off the players. He delegates well. He helps the captain as much as he can. And when he speaks, everyone listens because what he does say is really important. We have a style of play from the coach and the captain. They've worked together. And I feel like I knew Chris Silverwood well because he was a bowling coach. And
Did that help?
Yeah.
Was it not difficult that... As a bowling coach, you can go to him and he'd be your best mate. You can tell him things you wouldn't tell the coach.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
It's like having an assistant manager in football.
Yeah, I see
you tell your assistant manager everything that you wouldn't tell the manager.
Yeah,
and it's easier to go to him as opposed to not wanting to go to the coach, i.e. Trevor Bayliss.
I see what you're saying, but I think Spoons has got such a good reputation and he's such a nice bloke in general that it's made that very easy. He's absolutely mental as well, which...
I grew up with Spoons. He's one of the toughest men and the hardest men I've ever met.
Yeah,
and
so he makes it easier for me because I'm a bit mad as well.
How is he on discipline? Because that could be the difficult part when you've got to discipline somebody.
Yeah, I think he's very honest, Spoons. I think if...
Right. Yorkshireman, yeah.
Yeah, I think if you know, he's not happy about something, he'll not be horrible or he'll not be nasty about it, but he'll tell you straight. Yeah. And I think, you know, honesty is the best way forward. Mm.
No, I think he's a great man. And I actually think English cricket have got things in place now that it's arguably the best management structure that I believe that England have had for a long, long time. I don't think that England could be in any better place than where they are now. And you're going to go, hopefully, to Australia and hopefully try and win the urn back. But before that, you've got India, huge. Is that what you would say is the best warm-up for the Ashes?
It's not even a warm up for the Ashes. I'd say it's a big deal, full stop. Yeah. I think they've got so much to pick from in India. You're seeing now with the IPL all the good young players that's come through, never mind the good experienced players they've got. So that'll be a massive test for us to see where we are as a young, especially batting unit, a young batting unit coming through. Can we deal with the likes of Bumrah? Can we deal the spinning conditions in India or the UAE? I think it's a big test and one that I'm sure we can deal with. I know you'll say that I have to say that because they're my teammates, but I think that, you know, if we want to get to where we wanted to get to, and that's number one, we want to beat Australia, we're going to have to beat sides that are right up there and we're going to have to find a way. And I think that's the best way of putting it, find a way to beat them. We feel we've got the depth. Let's find a way to beat them.
That's the best saying for me in any dressing room. No matter what your preparation was like, no matter how good your nets were, no matter how well you feel, when you get on the field, plan A could go out the window, plan B can go out the window, and you find a way. And I think that's arguably what England's white ball team have done for the last however many years, culminating in the World Cup. And I think that's what the Red Bull team have got to learn to do, and that's going to be the challenge of what India comes. So, yeah, I wish everybody in England well, because I want them to do it. And it's nice when you're playing because you've got an added interest in Ben Stokes and a few others. And you've got a legacy to live up to. And going a little bit back on what we've been saying, but that 2019 World Cup win, how good was it to show the case, the trophy around the country and get young people to, and you get to see what it meant to young people?
I remember watching a video the next day. It was a woman who was 82, I think.
Yeah.
And she says, she has a grandson. And she says, oh, I'm so happy, George. And it was just like, wow, I kind of believe that even, you know, it stretched that far. You see Trafalgar Square, you see people might not believe this, but we saw every video. Mm. The media guys showed us celebrating in local cricket clubs. And it was amazing to see and think the impact. Because I know people might think, oh, well, you're an England cricketer, but it's mad even for me to think that that is the impact that we would have. I think being able to take the trophy up to my local cricket club was a huge deal for me.
400 people turned up for that. Unbelievable.
Yeah. So took it up the road where I grew up. Endless pictures. I had arms like Arnie in the end.
That's not Arnold Schwarzenegger. That's Arnie Gilholm. And for anybody who's listening from Ashton, they'll know who Arnie Gilholm is. He's the best bowler that's ever played the game. He's better than Fred Truman, Arnie Gilholm.
Yeah, so it was lovely to take that up and you know, showcase it to the local community and a lot of the young kids that I now watch growing up there.
Here is Wood. And looks at the goal! Straight through the number 11. Middlestump Yorker. Mark Wood has five.
Mark, we'll finish with a chat on basically on you and what you've accomplished, the way you've gone about your career so far. And I'm so proud of the way you've gone. What's left for Mark Wood to accomplish and what's going to drive you on to get to where you want to be by the time you're age 42, like I am, sitting here 5 stone heavier than what I was when I played? How are you going to get there and what's going to drive you?
I think the driving thing for me is to win things. I think winning the Ashes, winning the World Cup, having that sort of that time where you'll never forget those memories with your teammates is literally invaluable. You can have the medals, you can have everything, but the memories of achieving that. And I think personally, I still think I've got a lot to prove and to prove a lot of people wrong. I know you might say, oh, well, you've taken wickets here, you've won the World Cup, but you know, I feel like I'm always trying to claw back potential, claw back a career that I could have had or should have had without injury. And I feel like I've still got a lot of things to prove. And I still want to have that drive and determination to prove people wrong and for myself to you know, be as good as I can be and look up to great names that's ahead of me and try and catch those guys.
Well, I always wish you well and thank you very much on behalf of TalkSport 2. We wish you well in South Africa and in India and, you know, thanks very much for enlightening and hopefully everybody's enjoyed at home listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with Mark Wood.
Our thanks to both Steve Harmison and Mark Wood for their time over the last hour. You've been listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. If you've missed any of the show or just wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from Apple Podcasts, Acast and Spotify. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.